Hey, if you've suffered an injury in an accident and would like a free case review, make sure you call the super team at Daspit Law Firm. Free consultations are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 713-CALL-NOW. That's 713-CALL-NOW. Or you can go to the website, DaspitLaw.com.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, it's John and Lance.
On ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Now here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back. Our final hour this morning here on ESPN 97.5, 713-780-3776. You want to get in here? You are more than welcome. Yeah, Michael Conforto was a story yesterday. The Astros are looking into that. Looks like they're not going to be able to trade, or the talks with for Isak Paredes are slowed down. So they still would like a left-handed bat in the lineup, maybe a little bit more experience than what they've got in the outfield right now. So Michael Conforto is a possibility. Kevin Durant. Well, I don't want to say he addressed the burner accusations.
Well, let's play it.
Yeah.
He actually did not
address the burner accusations, although he was asked the question yesterday at practice, and so was Coach. Coach was asked about it, and he said, I don't deal in social media. But here's Kevin Durant's answer to the question.
Kevin, there was allegations over the All-Star break that you used the burner account to disparage current and former teammates. The handle for the burner was at GetHigher77. Is that your account? Did you send the messages?
I know you got to ask these questions, but I'm not here to get into Twitter nonsense. You hit it from the CEO. Keep it pushing. I know I get feel happy.
Keep moving with your mic.
My teammates over there, we've been locked in the whole season.
Well,
what?
Oh God! I thought I was gone.
You were.
Well, it's kind of like you are.
In and out. Feels like you're gone sometimes.
No, it's not in and out. It's fine.
No, I can hear you. It's not fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
He did. I mean, he's not here for Twitter nonsense. He never has been.
No evidence ever of him being there for Twitter nonsense.
They're screenshots, but it's not him.
No, but over the course of his career, we know not there for Twitter nonsense.
Nope. He prefers to just keep it analog. This is not a digital warrior who's got his phone in his hands
in,
all the time.
In the world,
he's somebody
of,
who reads.
Well, we yes.
He no,
comments.
Is,
he reads the comments.
Okay, that's true. We didn't say what he reads. That's true. He reads comments.
In a world of like in. The hierarchy of non-answers, considering his background and what we know about him, this is one of the worst. You might not want to answer, not give it any oxygen. I get it, but don't say you're not here for the Twitter nonsense.
Yeah, that was mm-hmm.
go.
That was up there with
way.
Rafael saying, "This might not be our year."
Yeah, not great answers.
Yeah, I'm not here for the Twitter nonsense, like sir. Twitter nonsense is literally your hobby.
I have so much evidence that says otherwise.
This is literally your hobby. Your favorite thing is Twitter nonsense. And so much so, there's two things that I know Kevin. There's three things Kevin Durant loves to do: shoot over smaller players, trash talk people at games who sit courtside who try to yell out things.
I know where you're at, white boy.
And although he didn't say that, he just, why are you riding my D?
You know, he said, release yourself from my D.
Yeah, which he would have said on Twitter, too.
Sure.
But and then also tweeting at people and roasting them.
Even if they have not mentioned you at all.
Even when they haven't even mentioned you. Those are the three things that he absolutely loves to do.
He's a basketball gatekeeper, and that tends to lead to the Twitter back and forth.
That's a great way to put it. He is a basketball gatekeeper. And in theory, that's fine. Like, he's trying to look at, because I think he loves the sport. Like, he does love basketball. He loves to play. He'll tell you, I'm not a leader. I don't want to be a leader. I'll lead by example, but I don't want that burden on my shoulders. He likes to play with other, you know, big-time guys who can take on that leadership role. So, you know, like, I wish he was a leader. I wish he did, because you kind of need one of those guys like a Will Anderson to right the ship when things aren't going good. A players only meeting where a guy, where it matters, when a player steps up and says, uh-uh, we're not doing this. And KD will tell you, I don't want to be that guy. But he's got a lot of energy to address things, I can tell you that. And unfortunately, we have to operate with the assumption that there's a chance that this is real. I didn't want to believe it. I initially just wrote it right off. And then when I found out, oh, it's a group text? Oh, I mean, it could be true.
Stuff happens in group text.
Yeah.
That you just, there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, you could not say it, but who's going to not say stuff in a group text?
Yeah, you have to say it.
You have to say things. Yeah, you have to make sure that there's mutually assured
destruction.
Yeah, like there's an agent who I go back and forth with. I know. I don't delete our tweets, our texts back and forth, because if he ever says anything about me, I'll just nuke him. So that's, you know, that's how I keep myself safe. It's just a deterrent.
That's all because we got a thread where all of
this
us.
This is what you said about this player. Oh, yeah?
Well, watch what you
said.
Well,
this is what you said that the FBI might be interested in. And I've already told that guy, dude, please get a burner when you text me so the FBI doesn't trace your calls to me so that I'm not implicated in whatever you've got going.
You're being too specific, okay?
Well, I mean, it could be any agent, but every agent listening right now, or anybody who knows the agent business probably knows. Oh, but I know who that is.
By the way, Mike Burrows threw yesterday. Joe Espada was very complimentary.
On that changeup game?
Yeah, right? Right? I mean, it was, Mike Burrows. I'm telling you here and now. That's my guy.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Burrows. He's going to be the next. He could finish top three Cy Young.
Well, yes, he could, because he's an active pitcher.
That's right.
He's allowed to possibly be top three Cy Young.
Yeah, that's what I said. I said it. There. Oh. I said it.
He said what he said, Dell.
No, I'm just pointing out what a limb he went out on. He could be top three.
That's right. Yeah. Did you say it? No.
No, but I could say other things, like J.P. France could be the best bullpen arm this year. Could be.
He's not even on the team. What team is he on?
Didn't he come back?
Did he come back?
They designated him. He said, no, I'm good. I'll stay.
Oh, nobody knows.
That's do. I just told you because I know.
It's impossible to know.
He returns. He's embracing his underdog role. We do have Sean if you want to talk to someone else.
Yeah. Let's get Sean in here. Hey, Sean.
What's up, Lance? Hi, John. How you doing?
Hello, Great. Sean. How you doing?
Good. So, yeah, honestly, I'm not even surprised because this is just KD's MO. This is just his MO at this point. I mean, he, like, everywhere you go, like, whether it's OKC, Golden State, Brooklyn, Phoenix, he always does this. He always blames others, and he just never takes accountability. It's always everybody else but him.
Yeah, but he doesn't blame teammates that I know of. Well, I don't know. Sean, do you have an example? Do you have an example of who he's blaming? What is your example?
I'm sorry?
What is your example of when this has happened? Who has he blamed, like in New Jersey?
In the burner accounts, he blames a lot of other people.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess. Well, no. In his previous burner account, he didn't blame anybody. He goes after fans.
He
goes after 15-year-old bloggers, actually.
About not wanting to play for Billy Donovan anymore.
Yeah, but that's not.
Yeah, what about that's Hitler not the same. And Stalin? What about
no, you don't know that those are his. You don't know that those are his. He never admitted to those.
Oh, well, they just seem like it. I don't know. Did you see A.J. DeBanza go off last night? I mean,
from a
no
basketball
question.
Standpoint?
Yes, 35, yeah. I think.
I don't know if he said something. Yeah, DeBanza over Peterson 100 days out of 100 days.
100%. Yeah, 100%.
And DeVanta was supposed to be that guy headed into the season anyway. He's a good player.
He put 35 on Arizona.
Yeah.
So, yep. And you know, and Peterson won't even play. Peterson played 18 minutes against Oklahoma State.
He wasn't feeling great. He already had it. He already had 20 plus. Let that man rest his legs. He's tired.
In 18 minutes.
Yeah, look how great he was. He put in enough time. Okay, Oklahoma State ain't a challenge. Let me go sit down.
Oh, was Arizona enough of a challenge?
He was hurt.
Play in that game?
He was sick.
Oh, that's right.
He was sick.
Right. He has missed not just games that he left early. He's missed 11 of their 26 games.
I think you should take into account how tired he is.
Tired? Oh, my God.
He's carrying the weight of Kansas basketball on his shoulders.
Maybe he should call Kristaps Porzingis and see how to get out of that tiredness.
Oh, an NBA champion?
Yeah. Yeah.
I just think you both are too hard on Darren Peterson. You're going to realize that sometimes as you mature, you start to learn things. He's only like 19, right?
No,
He'll care about basketball once he's a multimillionaire.
Yeah, there's no red flags.
Yeah, we
got a break.
He's not a Georgia football player, John.
Uh-oh.
Did you see
when
that?
When we come back.
We got a break. All right. Let's get that in. Kellen Sampson going to join us at the bottom of the hour. So right now, though, let's talk a little bit about Billy Brown and Aqueduct Plumbing Company.
Oh, we got to call Billy at my house. I sent my wife the number. I said, just text Billy. She tried I told you, I don't want to bother Billy. So we got this super powerful drain clogger over that they have to put in a plastic bag so you don't burn your face off. Poured it down the drain. It worked. Guess what? Here we are 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, same problem. She just texted me, we need to call Aqueduct on this again. I'm sorry to have to bother them again, but we're going to have to. We need to get them to snake it or whatever because this stuff is just a Band-Aid. And I'm like, I know. I guess I got to call. I said, here's the number. I'm busy. I'm writing up bad tight ends from LSU. You need to call Billy Brown. And I said, here's Aqueduct Plumbing Company's phone number. Call them tomorrow, which is today. So we're going to have them come back out. And I know they're going to do it fast, John, because they have multiple trucks, multiple plumbers. They get to jobs that are big or small very, very quickly, and they get it done the right way at a very fair rate.
Yeah, it's not great calling about a clogged sink, but if it's a chronic clogged sink, yeah, then you got then
it's
you
chronic.
Know what, there's a problem, right? So that's what Billy is here for. But here's the deal: again, there's no job that's too big, and you know maybe if you got a clogged drain, maybe you should try something first. But the thing about it is that Billy and his guys, they're going to come to your house. They know everything. They're so knowledgeable. They're not going to charge you just to come out. They're going to do the job. They're going to do a great job. You're going to love dealing with them. It sucks to have a plumber, but when you have to have a plumber, you got to have Billy Brown and Aqueduct Plumbing Company. 281-488-6238 or aqueductplumbingcompany.com.
ESPN 97.5. John and Lance
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back. Kellen Sampson joining us in a couple of minutes. Call your food friends and get the lowdown what's going on with this basketball team in just a couple of minutes. We do have a caller. He wants to defend Sean Dell. Is that what you said? Chris wants to defend Sean, whoever Sean is. Hey, Chris.
No, I want to defend Peterson, the kid from Kansas, but I'm being a little facetious, John, before you jump on me. Why do we give Tari Eason, I hate Tari Eason, so let me just start off with that. Why do we give him a faster percentage of games he plays versus trading him and we bag on kids like this? I mean, this is what they're seeing in the NBA. Like, the NBA sets the tone for kids to play like this. You guys brought up some, I forget what the like incentives for people to play. What is the NFL or the NBA? Excuse me, the NBA. Lance, I don't know if you guys know what the NBA's revenue is. What if they gave, hey, if you play 70 games, we'll give you a 10% salary bump. If you play 77 games. We'll give you a 15% salary bump.
You already have a salary. You have to pay them more to get them to play?
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? But it's kind of true if you think about it. I mean, versus when I'm a 45, so I grew up in the 90s watching these guys, you know, ball out for 81 games if they missed a game, you know, bothered them. But guys like Tari Eason, so he's back on Peterson, but he's watching guys like Tari Eason get bags. And Tari's, I guarantee you, if you looked at it, has played the exact same percentage of games as this guy in Kansas. Am I right or wrong? Why are we trading Tari?
Well, are they legitimate injuries, though?
Yeah, Tari has had legitimate injury that was real, a lower leg injury that not only was really tough to come back from, but appears to be something that may be kind of chronic.
I don't doubt that Tari Eason wants to play. I just do you doubt that Yordan wants to play?
No, I don't doubt. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. I mean,
do you doubt that Carlos Correa wanted to play? Either. Well, Chris is fair. Bring Chris back up.
He has a legitimate injury. Darren Peterson is pulling himself from games with nothing for no apparent reasons. So,
well, he was already. We got to go. We got Kellen right now.
All right. Kellen's joining us right now. Kellen Sampson, assistant coach at the University of Houston, head coach in waiting, with us here this morning on ESPN 97.5. Great to have you on the show. I think you were on with us a while ago, Kellen. Thank you for joining us once again. We appreciate that. We want to talk about this basketball team. We want to talk about this game coming up. This run that you guys are on, playing Iowa State, Arizona, and then Kansas, I don't know that it gets any tougher than this. Tell us what this week is like for you guys.
You know, I think as first of all, big fans of you guys and your show, and so this is a thrill for me. But you know, it's exhausting. It's thrilling. You know, we've got a team that we have a lot of college basketball fans on our team. We've got a lot of guys on our team who are the sons of coaches, obviously myself included, that college basketball means something to these guys. Milo Zuzan's dad was a high school coach. Emmanuel Sharp's dad was a high school coach. Kingston Fleming's dad's a high school or is a grassroots coordinator. So these guys grew up watching college basketball. And so for they have absolutely have great appreciation for the magnitude of the week and the opportunity and what the stakes are. And so that makes it fun, too, is that we've got a lot of birds of the same feather within our building. And so, you know, when getting and preparing for these games actually is fairly easy, and that because our guys have so much working knowledge of the opponent and the personnel of that we're playing. And so you're able to kind of quickly get into the studs and the nuts and the bolts of this and put together game plans and go after these guys.
I'm curious if is that a conscious decision? I mean, does it just happen that way, or do you target sons of coaches? Or are you just kind of naturally drawn to a certain type of player, and then that type of player, a lot of times, it turns out that their competitiveness, their basketball IQ happens to coincide with the fact that they are the son of a coach. Like, is it something where you actively target guys like that, or a differentiator between one player and another player that you're looking at?
I think you're looking for a certain, you know, archetype, and you're certain looking for a certain player, and you know, when you stumble on it, it's not hard, you know, in the recruiting world, it's not hard to kind of point out a Houston Cougar type player. Now then when you get into the recruiting, when you actually get into the recruiting aspect of it, I'd be lying if I told you it wasn't a little easier to recruit the sons of coaches. Obviously we've got some pretty decent parallels and the relationship building process is pretty smooth and easy, but you know, it's just the way that the cookie crumbled for this particular team. It's not necessarily something that we identify. Again, one of our best players last year, Jaywan Roberts, was definitively not a fan of college basketball growing up, and so it's just the way that the cookie crumbled.
Kellen Sampson joining us here on ESPN 97.5. You're going through some stuff. Well, I mean, Kingston was just great anyway the other night. So, you know, these big games don't seem to be a huge problem, but you don't you haven't had freshmen that have had these bigger roles. How different is it to have freshmen out there when you're playing in these big games and they're seeing it for the first time?
Yeah, wildly different, right? When they're as competitive and mature, and I think that, and when we're looking and identifying the recruiting process, right, is you're looking for competitive dudes and you're looking for mature guys. And Kingston was a 10 out of 10 in the recruiting process. And this is a kid that we've been recruiting since, right around his 15th birthday. And so we had a lot of time to get to kind of know the DNA and the bones of King. And we felt really good, all last year that, look, we didn't necessarily need to go sign a veteran or add somebody a little longer in the tooth because, we knew King was this good. We knew he would be a minute one, day one sort of guy. And those are rare. But when you're able to put your paws on one, you just do a heck of a job at sometimes not overcoaching him. Let him be him. Let the situation breathe. Let it grow organically like we have with King all year, and do a good job of not trying to put too much of a seatbelt on him, but just trying to mentor and guide him as he works his way through his freshman year.
How about Chris's development?
Some fun. Both of those guys. Again, Chris Cienic's another kid that I think one of the X factors with both him, even Isaiah Harwell, who's kind of in our six-man role, all three of those guys, we recruited them since they were sophomores in high school. So we had long-standing, deep-rooted relationships with them. All three of those guys spent quite a bit of time in our building in the recruiting process. So they had an awesome familiarity and awareness of what Cougar basketball is. They had deep rooted relationships with Emmanuel Sharp and Milo Suzanne, Ramon Walker. They had relationships with our existing guys. So I think that certainly sped up all of their acclimation periods. But for a guy like Chris, who for the first time in his life is playing a forward position when he's been a center, to come, almost 180 from where he was in October, November to be able to play big boy, Big 12 basketball here in February, getting ready to be March, speaks to his maturity level and his willingness to be coached every day, which is truthfully, which is a dream. And so stinking proud of him. And because he's had some hard days and some humbling moments, and, for him to kind of be, as we hit down the stretch here, for him to be standing tall makes the coach feel good.
From the inside looking out, I'm curious what your take and your dad's take was and your entire staff's take was on the discussion about Houston moving into the Big 12. And it clearly is a more difficult conference. There clearly is a lot of great basketball. But the thought that this was going to be a lot for University of Houston to overcome, and maybe they weren't quite the team that everyone thought because they hadn't played this level of competition. Can you give us your thoughts on what you guys discussed or what your thoughts were as you made that move from the AAC into the Big 12 and acclimating into that level of basketball?
Yeah, no, I thought that we had a unique advantage in that. Obviously, my dad coached 12 years in the Big 12. I played 4 years in the Big 12. And so we certainly understood the challenge at its most basic level of what it was like, not just to play and compete in the Big 12, but to really, really thrive and have and be in a position to compete for championships in the Big 12. And our perspective on it was that it was going to take a wholehearted effort from everybody involved to, elevate our program. We thought our team would be ready to compete. Our program needed
quite a bit of gasoline in order to get our machine up to par and up to speed. And we still may not be all the way there, but we've certainly covered a lot of ground in a short amount of time. But as a whole, and I always thought this, is that our 12-month, 18-month obstacles were significant, but the 5-year window of this opportunity was magnificent. And yes, we needed to do, and a lot of people were very generous, and a lot of people did a lot of great work in a short amount of time to keep giving us the opportunity to chase championships and to hang banners and things of that nature. But the 5-year window and outlook for, you know, not just Houston Cougar basketball, but for the University of Houston Athletics is beautiful. And, you know, I look at where we are compared to where, you know, our former AAC brother in Memphis is. And you know, you can't help but think back and just how grateful we are that, you know, that we had enough people, significant people that were involved at the ground level and helping us get into the Big 12, because, you know, we're on a great trajectory, obviously as a basketball program, but I certainly think our athletics department is on an awesome trajectory right now. And, without the inclusion in the Big 12, I don't know if our arrow would be pointing quite as north.
And, well, you could argue, and you've been in it for so long, I don't know, from my perspective, I don't know that the Big 12 has ever been better in basketball. With the addition of Arizona and BYU, and Kansas is as good, your guys are as good, that Texas Tech is much better than they've ever been. This is the best it's been.
I'm not sure we're not better than the NBA East. the truth of it is a competitor's dream. It's an absolute, from a competitive standpoint, it's an absolute dream to get to compete and prepare in it as a coach. It tests every last bit of your abilities. It raises the ceiling of your capabilities as a competitor when you know what you are responsible for and the task that at hand in preparing your team to go to battle against these other programs and these other top coaching staffs. It requires your competitive blade to be as absolute sharp as it possibly can be. Every second of every day. And you get into this industry because you want a chance to go against the best. I've been fortunate to be at some other places, and you climb the ladder, the coaching ladder, in order to get to a spot like this, a spot like the University of Houston, where you have a great angle at going against the best in the country. And it's agonizing, it's exhausting, it takes you to your absolute limits at times. And if you're a competitor, the exhilaration and the thrill you feel from the preparation of battle is everything that you want it to be. And it's hard, it's difficult, but I wouldn't want it any other way.
Kellen Sampson with us this morning on ESPN 97.5. Where are you guys defensively compared to some of your recent teams? Is this team as good?
I think our top shelf is as good. Maybe I don't know if we get to our top shelf defensively quite as often as maybe some other teams. Difference being is that our top shelf offensively is higher than other teams. I think that the best teams have a lot of they create a lot of different ways to win. You can win in a slugfest, you can win in a shootout, you can win in a battle of attrition, you can win any number of ways. And whereas as good as last year's team was,
You know, the last year's team's greatest gift is that we could drag you into the swamp and make every team we played play our way. That was last year's team's gift, but we maybe only had a smaller amount of ways that we could win. Whereas this year's team, you know, we probably have a few more different ways that we can get to the finish line. You know, for my dad and I, sometimes that's a little frustrating because we want to win one way sometimes. Yeah, just our youthfulness and maybe some of our inexperience prevents us at times from being as dominant defensively as some other teams that were older and more mature. But the sheer offensive firepower and talent of this group is different than maybe we've had in some other teams, and you know, that gives us perhaps a few more ways to get to zeros on the clock.
I got one last question for you. Is there ever a time you're the presumptive and assumed and likely head coach in waiting? Have you ever thought about, like, just, hey, Dad, aren't you getting tired of all this? Isn't this getting to be a little much for you? Wouldn't you love to be out, you know, playing golf with Granado a little bit more, or, you know, fishing or whatever your dad loves
you
to do?
Hey, you can go with Chad, Jonathan, Clay, go play.
Go, you, no, hey, yeah. Yeah. Do I think about being the head coach? Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Every day. And do I try to, you know, visualize and imagine, you know, absolutely. But do, I'm also having so much fun with my dad. You know, and I've been fortunate, blessed that I've had quite a few opportunities maybe to go do this and run another program. And it, at the end of the day, my wife always asks me the same question. Is this opportunity worth pulling our kids away from grandma and grandpa? Is this opportunity worth whatever extra or bonus years that you could spend being a head coach? Would you look back on it and it was worth costing you that additional bonus years of doing this with your dad?
Yeah, that's great.
And at the end of the day, the answer is always no. An additional 5 years or 3 years or 2 years of running my own shop, and it's not worth the thousands of extra hours I'm getting to spend with my hero. It's not worth the extra thousands of hours I'm getting to spend, you know, with somebody I consider, you know, my best friend. And, you know, individual accolades or attention and all that stuff, it's never why you got into coaching anyway. It's always about the people and the relationships and the ability to do something bigger and greater than yourself. And I couldn't imagine a coaching journey being more fulfilling than being able to be shoulder to shoulder with somebody I spent my entire life idolizing. And so whenever, you know, he's earned the absolute right to do this his way on his terms, and it's the greatest thrill and honor of my life to, you know, keep putting the pen in his hand, letting him write his own story. There'll be more than enough time for me to write mine. But, you know, here in the short term, I'm having a blast letting him, you know, write his story his way.
So I've seen as tough as, in, you know, as driven and disciplined and everything else that as he is, I've seen him with the grandkids and what a teddy bear he appears to be.
Yes.
What would be surprising for our listeners right now about one thing that would probably surprise them about him?
He has this, and it's his gift. He has this unique ability for everybody he comes in contact with, for them, for them to think that he's their best friend. He's their go-to person. My daughter did last year, a first grade project, and they had to list out their favorite and best of everything. It was like an end of the year thing. And three of her categories was either Papa or Papa's House. You know, it's like, who's your best friend? She wrote Papa. Well, you know, what's your favorite thing to do? Go to Papa's house. You know, who do you, you know, where is your best sleepover? Papa's house. You know, it's kind of made my mom feel a certain type of way. But, you know, he is this, you know, I say this all the he's the most talented human being I've ever met. And not just in basketball, just as a human being, as a person, his common sense factor is just through the roof. And he has an innate ability to connect with everything and everybody in every situation. I think his empathy, maybe is what I'm trying to say, his empathy is admirable. And I think his empathy is what everybody should be envious of. And his ability to 1,000% be exactly where his feet are in every single second of every day.
That's great. That is great. That's Kellen Sampson, assistant coach and coach in waiting for the University of Houston. Man, what a week. What a weekend. You got Arizona, which is the toughest team. Got to get that Vertita Center. I love going. I think it's our best place to play, my favorite place to watch a game, and it better be electric on Saturday, and then off to Kansas right after that. So, man, you got a lot of work to do. We appreciate the time that you spent with us, Kellen, and you know, hopefully we can do it again soon.
Hey, look forward to it. I think it's the biggest game in Vertita Center history.
Yep.
You know, it's a building that maybe hasn't been. We haven't earned a distinction of being historic, but in our 7-year, 8-year, whatever it is, history, this is the biggest game in Vertita Center history. And look forward to seeing the building in Cougar Red on Saturday.
It'll be crazy. Hopefully it'll be crazy. Great stuff. Thank you, Kellen.
See you guys soon. Talk soon, guys.
All right. There's Kellen Sampson with us here on ESPN 97.5. Good stuff. Good stuff. Boy, you can tell. You know what? That was a cool answer about, you know, not wanting to take over for his dad. It's to spend as much time as he could with him. That's great stuff. Great stuff.
I'll just tell you now, I want my dad out. Dad, this is enough.
I mean, honestly.
If I'm Kellen, I'm like, the game has passed you by. Son, I have, like, number one in the nation every year.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
If I'm Kellen, I'm like.
That's a hard sell.
If I'm Kellen, I'm like, yeah. But you got a TJ Ostenberger problem. I wouldn't have one. You've lost three times to him in three seasons. I would never lose three times to him in three seasons.
That's tough to tell your best friend that, Dell.
I know,
would
but
you
sometimes,
tell that to Sean Mapes, sometimes your best
a hard
friend?
Sometimes a hard truth is needed.
Would you tell that to your best friend, Sean
He's
Mapes?
Not my best friend. But sometimes
what about AJ, your best friend?
Not my best friend. That's racist. Not my best friend.
It's not racist to have a black best
racist?
Friend.
He just because you just assumed.
I have black friends. What's
just,
wrong with you?
You just assumed.
Okay.
No, racism.
He said, no, he's in that room. It's either Sean or him.
Mace, why?
He said Mace
well, because
first.
They're the only two I ever see.
And then
see
when I
with.
Told him no, then he went to the first black guy he could think of.
Oh, would you tell your mom?
Because he's the other producer who's on with you.
My mom, sometimes hard truths are needed. Like, Mom, Jesus did not have dreads. I know you
well,
love
actually,
that shirt. I know you love that shirt.
Were you there?
I asked the right question to the right people who would know. He didn't have dreads.
You asked something to someone who was there.
He wasn't
back then.
Blonde and blue-eyed either, but he didn't have dreads, Mom.
I'm not sure that
there's
hairstyle
a lot of hair washing going.
I'm not sure that hairstyle was in vogue then.
Well, sometimes hard truths are needed.
Well, wait a minute. It doesn't take much to get dreads. You have to not wash your hair.
Don't wash hair. But I think maybe hair.
You think Jesus was conditioning?
He was washing feet.
Now wait a minute. You do know back at that time they would put oil in their hair. And it would be even dirtier and greasier.
But that's not going to make it not up.
Yeah, you have to do or not do certain things. But sometimes hard truths are needed. And Kellen may have to just tell Dad, hey, that guy in Ames owns your ass.
Wow, that is so rough to tell your dad.
Wow.
If you got to get the message across.
Oh, my God.
All it's going to do is make Kellen more determined. Or to make Kelvin Sampson more determined to beat
him. I don't believe that would happen, but if you're trying to take over, sometimes you got to hit him where it hurts.
That's it. Break. News of the weird next. That's it.
ESPN 97.5. Time now for News of the Weird.
People are weird.
With John and Lance.
That's real weird.
A woman was arrested at Harry Reid Airport in Las Vegas. Apparently, she didn't have the right documentation to bring her dog on the plane. So what she did was she tied the dog to the counter and then she got on the plane. And apparently this is a problem for people. First of all, that's illegal. She got arrested for it. First of all, we don't know what she looks like. That's one thing. Secondly, we don't know if she even liked the dog. Apparently she didn't. And she didn't like the dog enough that she just tied the dog up and walked away.
So you can't leave your dog at the American Airlines counter. That's illegal if you do it.
Yeah.
That's bull crap.
What's illegal about it?
Well, because you're abandoning the dog.
Is that illegal? People leave dogs on the side of the road all the time. Is that actually a crime? I'm actually asking.
I think it is a crime.
Well, it's not nice.
It's not nice, not
it's
at
not
all.
Not ideal.
It's not moral.
Yeah. It's not nice. Nobody said it was nice, but, I mean, arrested? Well, I'm looking at the video now of it. She should be arrested.
Okay,
No, he's not looking at the video of it. He saw a picture of it.
Yeah, according to the Texas Humane Network, you cannot legally abandon your dog. Abandoning a pet is a criminal offense.
Yeah, and it's there's a special place for you in hell.
Certainly.
Yeah. Apparently, a man at a strip club, Rachel's North Men's Strip Club and Steakhouse in Seminole County, apparently he lost consciousness, and instead of calling an ambulance, the bouncers put him in a cab and sent him home. And with no
dead
attempt to stabilize him, he died.
Yeah, I knew it.
And the family is now suing the strip club when, in fact, I mean, the bouncers at a strip club, what's the prerequisite there? I mean, what are we expecting out of these guys? I'm expecting the very least. Nothing against bouncers at strip clubs, but honestly, did we really think that they were going to think this out?
Yeah. What are the when you sign up to be a bouncer, does your establishment walk you through what's your responsibilities when someone is ill? Is it is it on the business to make the right call and call an ambulance and make sure there's medical care?
All that stuff. And then there would have been a bunch of people at the door with an ambulance and everything else.
It ruins business.
Yeah. And you know what? What you're there for is when guys get a little touchy-feely and you beat their ass. That's what you're there for. I mean, nobody's there for, I got to call an ambulance. I got to feel bad for this guy or something. We're not there for that.
We're not there.
Not with the bouncers. We're not there for that. That's not in my job description. Come on. I think not guilty. Not guilty for the bouncers. Guilty for the woman leaving the dog because I saw a picture of her. And not guilty for the bouncers.
What's a crime that you would put a hot woman in jail for?
Oh.
Outside of like the big ones, obviously, that no one should look past. But let's say armed robbery where no one gets hurt.
If nobody gets hurt, what are we going to do? What are we doing?
What do you mean, what are we doing? She robbed a place. She hurt a business and used a gun to do it.
Yeah, I know, but she probably needed some money, which is stupid because she should be able to get as much as she wants. I don't know. It depends. It's really there's very few things where we're gonna go guilty. Okay, very few.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you have friends who own businesses.
What about embezzlement, where they stole Chad Clay's money?
Yeah,
I think Chad might even go, you know what?
Taking food out of that man's family's mouth, you think he's just going to go, you're hot?
Well, I mean, what's in it for me afterwards?
What if some crazy lunatic burned Nick from Nick's place bar down? Hey, it's a little bit of a dive.
Well, you know what? You get the insurance money.
There it is. See, there's always an answer.
We just big up Michael from Pete's Fine Meats. What if someone walks in there?
Oh my God!
A hot woman walks in there with a gun and takes all the steaks.
No, that's a real problem. That man works hard for his steak.
But she's hot, John.
Yeah, I mean that's a problem. But I don't want to put her in jail for it. Maybe she just got to go back. She's got to work the counter from now on. That's
so you can see her when you walk in there to get your meat.
Yeah. Maybe she's just on display now.
On display,
like in the glass case.
Is she working there or in a glass case?
Just something.
Oh, look at this. 4 minutes into Del show.
Yeah, I'm actually now doing it on purpose. I normally
I know you are. Don't, John. Well, we got to go.
I'm not. We're done. Mopey and Mapes next. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, everybody. Have a great day.